everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion, February 24th, 2019. And we are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we will start with our morning prayer.
A very short prayer from page 224 of the Blue Book. Oh, may the light that is never dim so encompass you that no night is there. May his angels hold thee in their power, and songs of science be heard in the intuitions of thought, so your life is in tune with the rhythm of God.
Beautiful. Thank you. And miscellaneous writings, Mary Baker Eddy. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. There were a few things I wanted to mention this morning. One is about testimonies. As you know, Bruce on Wednesday night announces that the testimony should not be any longer than 4 minutes, 4 minutes or under. And also from the manual about not being very graphic in what you say. So please keep to that. We read it for a reason. We read it to remind you. And if it's not kept to that, we will have to cut you off if you keep talking past 4 minutes. And it's something we certainly do not like to do, okay? So we would prefer if you would just follow the rules, right? Thank you. One thing we were taught here by Mrs. Evans, anything you have to say, you can say concisely. She used to always, if we wrote articles, they had to be no longer than a page. And our testimonies had to be short and concise. It's a good discipline.
Yeah, and remember, what constitutes a good testimony? A brief description of the problem that you have and what you did about it, and any statements of truth that were particularly helpful to you, and then the fact that there was, in fact, a healing. And it should always be given with the audience in mind. Remember who you're speaking to. What does God want them to get from your experience? It should not be a, you know, personal diatribe, or it should a personal venting or anything like that. It should always be for the benefit of the audience. And if you keep that in mind, testimony will be wonderful.
Yes, and vast majority are wonderful. We're very grateful. The other, we have mentioned this law case that went on, the Australia suing Mother Church. We did get a short video of that this week from Melissa in Australia. I sent it to a few people. As far as we can tell, nothing was decided on, and it was very difficult to listen to. But if anyone should want that, I tried to send it to people who had expressed a curiosity, but we certainly can send that to you if you're interested. YouTube.
Yeah, Vimeo, and I can forward that if anybody needs
it. Thank you. And the other, we have mentioned the called the Terry Flynn Collection. He has a fellow by the name of Terry Flynn from Texas. I believe he got all the Science and Health from the Carpenter Collection. And then he very gloriously, in a way,
very diligently went through each one.
Yeah.
And took notes on all of the changes that this is getting made from one edition to the next. And as you know, there were lots of blocks. it's quite a volume listing all the changes. It's enough paper to take up an entire bookcase.
It certainly was a labor of love. And it was offered to us a few years ago, but it was a very, very expensive price.
Right.
And then we never knew what happened to it. And then more recently, due to Royce, who told us that England got it, our Marjorie Morgan, who was married to John Morgan, group there, received it.
Bought it.
And so we wrote them and asked them, told them if they were ever interested in selling it, we would be interested in it. And they wrote back right away.
Yeah, and they have two copies of it. They would be very happy to sell one of them to us, which we've agreed to do at a substantially lower price than where it was originally offered many years ago. So there will be. So they're arranging to ship one copy of it to us. So there will be one copy here in the United States and one copy in England for the benefit of anybody who wants to see how Mrs. Eddy changed the textbook over time. And we're hopefully going to recruit people to help us digitize this entire volume so that it will be available on the internet. So eventually people won't have to travel to Plainfield to study it if they want.
We got a brand new printer all ready to scan it. So.
It was a wonderful working out. I'm so grateful for that. Again, God working.
So this man went through from the first edition through to the last, 1910. Oh, my goodness, a lot.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And somewhere, you know, at first I thought, well, goodness, what would we ever do? Who would ever read it? But somewhere Mrs. Eddy says how important this is and all her editions are and the changes she made. She says it's important, it's important. So we are very grateful to have it, and who knows in what ways it can be used, but it will be in safekeeping here and in England. And we are, as you know, we're taking contributions for our library, because this is for our library, and we would appreciate, I know a few of you have sent some money, which we're very grateful for, we'd appreciate contributions for it. Someone very kindly, who wishes to remain anonymous, already has pledged half of the price of these volumes because he knows how important they are. So, we appreciate your donations very much. Thank you. Any questions on any of this? Okay, our subject today is Mind, the Golden Text, Psalm 32. I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will guide thee with mine eye. And we will start, Linda, with our watching point.
Watch number 31. Watch lest you feel that man is the master of divine power, rather than its servant. False theology declares that Jesus was equipped with deific power that he wielded to perform miracles as he chose. On page 119 of Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy writes that man is but the humble servant of the restful mind. When she went forth on the lecture platform, she prayed, quote, "Now, dear God, here I am, use me. I am absent from the body and present with thee in consciousness. Love uses me in its own good way. I would lift myself right out of the material sense of self and audience and let God use me." End quote. You must feel that divine power is using you. You must kneel in humility at the throne of God, asking and seeking to be imbued with deific power. Then you can go forth and exercise that power with authority. But you ask, is not this using divine power? Yes, but only as a servant who goes forth to do his master's bidding. Jesus might have been called master, because above all others, he permitted divine power to master him.
Yeah, so beautiful. This is the essence of it all. And I've always loved that, the humble servant of the restful mind. Remind myself of that often, keep in that frame of thought, humble servant of the restful mind, that's from Signs of Health.
This is why Mrs. Eddy stated over and over again that humility is absolutely essential to the practice of Christian Science. Anything that has human will in it is not Christian Science.
I felt that this watching point went very well with what Parsons wrote on the forum. So, Parsons.
Okay, Parsons writes on the forum. Christian Science calculus teaches me that self-subtraction automatically activates the principle of multiplication of God's benefits, blessings, and increase of God's presence in my life. Christ radiation intensifies to the degree to which self-absorption subsides. At the beginning of his reign, Solomon grew by self-subtraction. And Solomon said, O Lord my God, I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or to come in. 1 Kings. But as time passed, Solomon grew in matter-mindedness, self-enlargement, moving in the very opposite direction of the footsteps of his youth. In her unpublished 1887 sermon on Luke 14:30, quote, this man began to build, quote, for an unfinished and finished, end quote. Mrs. Eddy observes, Solomon was a master builder materially, but spiritually he was not able to finish with the gold of Ophir and the surpassing skill of art. His temple was unable to stand. His spiritual status was insufficient to draw a plan so elevated that its building is eternal in the heavens. His foundations were laid in sense, not science. His premises were false. He believed in evil and good. His faith in error was even bigger than in truth. He said, quote, there is a time for all things, a time to love and a time to hate, end quote. This theory has rotten foundations, and his materials were antagonistic to each other and self-destructive. Hence, he failed to finish his work and ended it by saying, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. And how can one know whether he be wise, a wise man or a fool? End quote.
What a wonderful thing to sound by Mrs. Eddy. And you see, he started out so well, didn't he, with this humility.
Is self-subtraction.
Self-subtraction. I thought, you know, last week we had, it was a bit of an unusual song that John sang called Let Me Fall. Yeah, Let Me Fall. And I think that kind of relates to this too, kind of what Carol spoke to.
Yeah, I thought it meant to let the material sense of me drop.
Right, drop away, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, this is what so important, but we must finish our course, right? And in finishing the course, you have to maintain that humility. Perhaps it gets very easy to lose it. Especially, I mean, look at Solomon, all that he seemed to have acquired, shall we say. And then, of course, all the women that he acquired. And they were
They were not all spiritually minded.
No, they were not. They were antagonistic to the God of Israel, the one God. And it ended up polluting him, adulterating him. And so he did not finish his course with joy. So it's a very important lesson. And Elizabeth, you want to read Christian Science and Pantheism?
Sure. I was reading Christian Science versus Pantheism. It's page 11, 16 to 19, and this citation just seemed to fit what happened to Solomon. Quote, if man is spiritually fallen, it matters not what he believes. He is not upright and must regain his native spiritual stature in order to be in proper shape, as certainly as the man who falls physically needs to rise again. End quote.
Thank you.
Very good.
Yeah. And Florence.
Yes.
She wrote. Want to tell us about the things that she wrote?
I thought that, you know, what both Elizabeth and Parsons wrote fits in with the self-abnegation that Mrs. Eddy taught and explained and emphasized that is something we have to do in order to, you know, stay the way we are to grow spiritually. And there's many citations in the Bible that talks about, you know, for example, when Paul said that I die daily, he's talking about self-abnegation, really, dying to the self, the mortal self, and gaining more of his Christ selfhood. And I listed some citations, Bible citations. But Mrs. Eddy also said in Science and Health, page 266, thus he teaches mortals to lay down their fleshliness and gain spirituality. This is done through self-abnegation. Universal love is the divine way in Christian Science. And then in Science and Health 568, 30 to 32, self-abnegation, by which we lay down all for truth or Christ in our warfare against error, is a rule in Christian Science. That was just telling us, you know, it's a rule we got to in order to keep on the right way. And I said that doing this effects the death to all the little foxes as well as the creeping things, and the false physical and emotional claims will have to yield to the supremacy of God's Spirit.
Thank you.
When Christ's disciples were arguing among themselves as to who was the greatest, Christ said, you should be a servant. He was a servant.
Thank you. Yes, very, very true. Seems to be a problem that pops up quite a lot. Something to be very much guarded against. Who shall be greatest? So.
Well, and haven't we seen it throughout the so-called Christian Science movement? You know, people start out on the right track and they have wonderful healing. Or they have wonderful demonstrations of, you know, business or otherwise. Some become quite wealthy, as Solomon did. And what's the temptation? They get comfortable. They get,
and also to think they're the ones doing it.
Yeah, they think that they're actually something. They get comfortable, they get complacent, and they forget God. They forget that God has given them everything that they have, and that God has given it to them for an unselfish purpose. And this little self starts creeping in. I'm going to enjoy some of this. I'm going to keep some of it for myself. And because I earned it, right? I deserve it. I was so good. I was so whatever. And that's the beginning of the downfall. When you get up off your knees in front of God is when you're going to fall.
Yeah, and we had a wonderful Bible study yesterday. Thank you, Tom. Talking about Job and his struggles and all the pride and that he had to get over, and then...
And he got over it.
He did. He got over it.
And thanks to Elihu.
Yep. And then he prayed for his friends, the self-abnegation, and not me, myself, and I, but what can I do for others? And that released him from that hell. It would have released Solomon, too, but he let it overtake him. So we must always be wise, listening to the Father. And that's certainly what this lesson is about. Who was speaking?
I was going to say, and Jesus demonstrated that by washing his disciples' feet.
Yes.
It's about the lowliest thing you can do, in a way. He did. And it is in this state of humility that you receive, I mean, this lesson is all about our faculties, perception, comprehension, and that state of humility that you receive it from God. No other way. That's in Citation 2 and Signs and Health. Mind alone possesses all faculties, perception, and comprehension. And those words, and looking them up, often have the word receive. Perceive, to know, understand, to receive. Faculty, the power of mind or intellect, which enables you to receive as the faculties of seeing, hearing, remembering, and comprehension is to understand and to take in. So, receiving, not that you have it, is it? You receive it. And when you think you have it, when you think you have this brain that is great, uh-oh.
Or when you feel like you have so much experience that you've got it, you're okay. You don't need God. Well, the human mind never, ever came up with an original idea.
Well, Mrs. Eddy says in Miscellaneous Writings, humility is a stepping stone to a higher recognition of deity.
Yeah. So it is absolutely, yes, a stepping stone.
Yes. And self-abnegation, as Florence said, is a rule. It's not an option. It's a rule, Christian Science.
The laws, principles of the universe. And many people who are not Christian Scientists, quote unquote, go by that name, perhaps, they express much humility, they express a lot of self-abnegation, and things go well for them. So it's not just, in fact, we know many Christian Scientists who aren't humble, who are not. It's all about them. How am I going to use this science to help me? That is a stumbling block. So remember, you are receiving from God these things. Seeing, hearing, remembering. You know, there's a lot now, all this stuff on Alzheimer's. Dementia, one of the popular Parisian garments everyone is hastening to get. So, as you live your life, remember it is not your personal mind that did so well. It wasn't your personal mind that got you A's in college or wherever, or your personal brain, I should say. I don't even want to use the word mind. Brain, which is what the vast majority of people think, isn't it?
Yes.
Because if you think you have a good brain, then you're also liable to what?
Very bad brain.
Have a bad brain.
If you think you were so good at remembering and so good at in school, and you think it was your brain, well, again, whoops, has nothing to do with your brain. It has something to do with your ability to receive from God his thoughts, his ideas, his vision, his hearing, which is totally spiritual.
I was just thinking that the statement that was said, people think they don't need God. If you're acknowledging that you're the reflection of God, what else is there? That's all you are.
Exactly.
Well, and that is seeing yourself correctly, isn't it?
Right.
And when you get to that point and prove it, and I know very few people that have proved it very well, but when you get to that point and prove it, well, then you see others correctly as well. And error starts to leave you alone. But only after you've done the battle with it and proven it.
Lawrence?
No, I think I just often think of if Christ Jesus himself, even he said that I can of my own self do nothing, then who am I to think I can do something?
It
doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
It's just a great, great safety in this. So, Jeffrey, you read all of 3 in Signs of Health, please.
Mind alone possesses all faculties, perception, and comprehension. Therefore, mental endowments are not at the mercy of organization and decomposition. Otherwise, the very worms could unfashion man. If it were possible for the real senses of man to be injured, soul could reproduce them in all their perfection. But they cannot be disturbed nor destroyed, since they exist in the mortal mind, not in matter.
Thank you. So remember this as you go about your day. Where
your mental endowments are not in your brain.
No, you're reflecting them from God. And therefore they cannot wear out or any way fall apart. And then you are being that humble servant of the restful mind. That wonderful book, little pamphlet by John Morgan, Some Notes on True Vision. It's so wonderful. I listen to it often. And I'll have, Carol, you read this one on life.
Life is the law of limitless enablement. So the more I exercise my vision, spiritually, mentally, and physically, the clearer and stronger it becomes. Unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. Matthew. There are no laws of limitation in the divine sight. It is no effort for me to see all things easily, as man is the unlabored motion of the divine energy. My sight is ever fresh, for it is the expression of newness of life. I know that my sight derives direct from the Father. It did not begin with birth, nor does it diminish with age. It is ageless, fadeless, ever new, self-renewed, and restored perpetually. I rejoice that I have perfect sight now. Life is the great giver. So my vision is generous and appreciative. My outlook is never mean or uninterested in others, but magnifies the divine individuality in everyone. In life, my vision is open and extrovert. It is directed outward, so that I actively look for and see God everywhere. In the newness of life, I am quick to see and appreciate new truths, new aspects of God and man, new ways of applying what I know. My vision never looks backward, but is constantly going forward.
Thank you so much in just a few little paragraphs. That is what your vision is. You can also relate it to all your faculties. You're hearing everything coming from God. And therefore, it cannot be lost, as the lesson also says. The end, Jeremy, you read number 13.
There is more Christianity in seeing and hearing spiritually than materially. There is more science in the perpetual exercise of the mind faculties than in their loss. Loss they cannot, while mind remains. The apprehension of this gave sight to the blind and hearing to the deaf centuries ago, and it will repeat the wonder.
Thank you. Now, so then you ask yourself, well, what are you using your hearing and seeing for? There's more Christianity in seeing and hearing spiritually than materially. So, if you are thinking your eyes, that you're seeing a material creation, you're seeing all the woes and everything that's wrong in the world, that's what you're hearing. Well, that's not very good use of your eyes and ears, is it? If that's what you're remembering. And so in that human sense of your sight, hearing, remembering, what do you think will happen?
Is it going to be subject to decay?
Yes. It will be. Because it's not of God. Again, disobedience to the first commandment. So, you receive your sight, your hearing, your remembering, all the faculties, and then they're from God, and so you see His creation, you hear His creation, you remember His creation. Those are the things you see, hear, feel, all of it. And in doing so, they can't be lost. They can't be touched. They cannot decay.
They grow keener, rather.
Yes, they do. They grow clearer.
And that is what makes them mind faculties as opposed to material faculties. When you use your faculties for God's purpose, you are the expression of God. You are the reflection of God. And that can never be impaired or lost.
Like what it said in Morgan's True Vision, where and then you will see God everywhere. That's beautiful. I think, yes, you want to see good everywhere. I think perhaps slowly, when you keep seeing all the wrong things, maybe you just don't want to see them anymore. So your vision grows dimmer. And you don't want to hear so many things anymore.
Thank you. That's so true.
That's true. If you continue to believe them and don't rise above them and see the spiritual reality that is going on in spite of what appears materially, it can be very discouraging, can't it? But it's not the truth. It's not what God creates. And that is why we can rise above the material appearance. We are capable. In fact, it is our duty to do so. And when we really want to, God helps us all the way. Just like the golden text says, I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will guide thee with mine eye. What better guidance could we ever get? Be guided by God's eye.
I love that when it says mine eye, not I. It strikes me every time I use the eye.
This is the omnipotence and omnipresence of our Maker.
And the pamphlet also brings out that yes, you are seeing all good, but that doesn't mean you don't see what's wrong, too. You do, but for one purpose and one purpose only, and what is that? To heal it. To heal it. Not to indulge in it or think it's a reality. You see very clearly exactly what's going on and the animal magnetism that seems to be going on, and you see it as that. You see it as not of God, therefore, as something that can only destroy itself, but not as some power. So this sight and hearing and remembering and feeling, touching, all of it, all for the glory of God, and it's complete. So it also, he makes, and it's so true, about the Sermon on the Mount, how many times Christ speaks about seeing, you know, your eye be single, cast the beam out of your eye. A lot of on the Sermon on the Mount about seeing. Vision is very important. And that beautiful hymn that Florence brought to us a while ago, Be Thou My Vision, O Lord of my heart. A beautiful little hymn to sing to yourself as you go about your day. Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. Now in the lesson, what's the definition of eyes?
Spiritual discernment.
Yes. And not material, but mental. And ears.
Spiritual understanding.
Putting it in that perspective, you could never lose it. You know, years ago it was interesting. Mrs. Evans realized the huge importance of the glossary and all those definitions. And she gave us a list of things in the glossary to memorize. Eyes and ears were two of them. Have them all marked, so... Another was angels, believing, children, Christ, church, ears, eyes, God, heaven, Japhet, Jesus, kingdom of heaven, man, oil, salvation, and temple. They're good to know these things, to remember what they are. Comes to mind when you need it. Again, comes to mind. You receive it. And remembering is, as we've talked about, a faculty of God. so you can remember everything you need to remember when you need to. To know everything you need to know when you need to. To see, to hear, all those faculties are with you. Okay, anyone else or any questions on this? Number eight, then, let's see. Lillian, read number eight, please.
According to Christian Science, the only real senses of man are spiritual, emanating from divine mind. Thought passes from God to man, but neither sensation nor report goes from material body to mind. The intercommunication is always from God to his idea, man. Matter is not sentient and cannot be cognizant of good or of evil, of pleasure or of pain. Man's individuality is not material. This science of being obtains not alone hereafter in what men call paradise, but here and now. It is the great fact of being for time and eternity.
Thank you. That word is cognizant. That's all right, but be aware of. Cognizant is to be aware of. So the inner communication is always from God to you. So what about nerves? What about pain?
Our true self can't be aware of it.
No, your true self cannot be aware of it. Go back to that truth and know, well, God isn't telling me this. He's not relaying these messages. So who is? And of course, Mrs. Eddy makes it very plain. It is not matter, right? Matter can't do it. Matter's just a heap of stuff. So it's your mortal mind, your belief in mortal mind that seems to be chattering. I was reading something I thought kind of interesting about childbirth and how, well, you know, and Adam and Eve, they say, well, a curse on man and a curse on woman, and you'll bring forth sorrow and all that kind of thing, and how they, in movies, something make it so horrible. But, well, this person was saying, when you contract your arm muscle, is that painful? No. Well, having a baby, it's muscles contracting. So what makes that painful? Except we accept that it will be, and it's been drummed into us.
That idea of no pain, no gain.
Yeah, well, anyway, I thought it made a good point, and also to annul, because what does Mrs. Eddy say? The curse on man is annulled. And if we think on these things and realize the truth of these things, we don't have to have these painful situations. This is mortal mind telling us, not God. God never said it. And, of course, I think it's Mrs. Eddy, you know, she talks about, look at the animals and everything in nature. It's all natural. It's all painless for the most part. These are things we are taught. And we need to unteach ourselves. Go ahead, Florence.
No, it's just a lot of false education there because to think of childbirth as God showing off his idea, how can there be any painful sense in that, as opposed to the false education of, oh, this is something passing through something and it has to, the nerves, this and the nerves send the message to the brain and all this stuff. But the beautiful idea of God showing forth his idea, I mean, where is the pain in that? It's quite a contrast of thought.
Thank you very much. So,
and the proof of that is that there have been many women who have had painless childbirth. So, so that proves that it's possible.
Yeah. The less of intrusion there is, that I think that the simpler, the more, the less painful I've witnessed.
Thank you. I think it was it last week or Pam in the testimony reading Science and Health, someone, I believe it was last week, gave that example of someone having painless childbirth and the next day getting out in the garden, eating, you know, just doing fine. Yeah. Many, 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 many examples of it. So we don't have to accept the belief of pain when you know that the inner communication is always from God to his idea.
I remember Mrs. Evans telling us years ago that there's an island, I believe in the Pacific somewhere, that's, you know, kind of cut off from civilization. And they don't believe that there's pain involved with childbirth, and there isn't. I just thought that was very encouraging.
Yeah, we suffer from our belief. And that's where the understanding, once we understand, the beliefs fall away, and then the suffering stops. Because it's not the truth about God's creation. And what Phil was talking about, I, mind, the only I or us. So, remember, when you say, I, it's the only mind, it's mind, can you say, I am sick, I am depressed? No.
Because the only I cannot be sick or depressed.
You as a reflection cannot be.
Thank you.
In Victor Young's article, The Practice of Christian Science, paraphrasing, he says, in regard to treatments, that it has nothing to do with the patient, nothing to do with the situation. It has solely to do with your relationship to God.
Thank you.
Can't tell you what page it is on in the blue book, but Mrs. Eddy lists the five spiritual senses, and for feeling, she says consciousness of God. So that would eliminate all the pain, et cetera, which I need to learn.
Oh, thank you. Yes, that is a beautiful in the blue book, all the senses. She tells the spiritual definition of each one, what they really are. Very important. Thank you. I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Lawrence has it marked in her blue book.
Two stickers.
Yeah, right. Right. And,
hello?
And someone trying to speak?
Yes, thank you. This is Ingrid. I just couldn't unmute it at the time you were talking about. But I just want to share that when you were talking about painless, bringing this children of God here, I experienced that in the most beautiful way for four children, and there was no pain. I had them at home with midwives, and the only thing that was there was the hint. And I didn't have to have any other thing. And, you know, they talk about stitches and whatever, and it was completely natural, and it was just a harmonious thing, and it was perfectly as God does everything, and a very joyful experience, painless, completely painless, four times. So God is absolutely wonderful and the signs of the crisis.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, God is good.
This is Lori. I just wanted to say I had a similar experience with my daughter's birth, and I was out roller skating on the speech the next day.
That's wonderful. All of this is proof of it. And Mrs. Eddy has said to sit quietly and declare, I am, will confer a power that nothing else can. And in Watches, Prayers, and Arguments, and we had it once for a watch, you know, where you declare this, I am. Just go alone and close your eyes, and in the depths of your own consciousness, say over and over and over again, I am, I am, I am. Your whole being will be filled with a sense of the power to overcome, the power to accomplish, the power to do all things. Then it goes, I am good, I am well, I am abundantly satisfied. Those are on pages 52 and 53. And it's a good exercise to fortify yourself with the truth. Now, Gary,
oh.
I don't know if we have time.
Okay, 10:51.
Gary found something interesting in Miscellany, which really addresses New Age, a word to the wise.
Yeah, on page 223 in Miscellany, short article by Mrs. Eddy. This is at a time when there were offshoots starting to get published. She writes, a word to the wise, the hour is imminent. Upon it lie burdens that time will remove. Just now, divine love and wisdom saith, be still and know that I am God. Do all Christian scientists see or understand the importance of that demand at the moment, when human wisdom is inadequate to meet the exigencies of the hour, and when they should wait on the logic of events? I respectfully call your attention to this demand, knowing a little, as I ought, the human need, the divine command, the blessing which follows obedience, and the bane which follows disobedience. Hurried conclusions as to the public thought are not apt to be correctly drawn. The public sentiment is helpful or dangerous only in proportion to its right or its wrong concept, and the forward footsteps it impels or the prejudice it instills. This prejudice the future must disclose and dispel. Avoid for the immediate present public debating clubs. Also, be sure that you are not caught in some author's net or made blind to his loss of the golden rule of which Christian Science is predicate and postulate, when he borrows the thoughts, words, and classification of one author without quotation marks, at the same time giving full credit to another more fashionable but less correct. My books state Christian Science correctly. They may not be as taking to those ignorant of this science as books less correct and therefore less profound. But it is not safe to accept the latter as standards. We would not deny their authors a hearing, since the scripture declares, he that is not against us is on our part. And we should also speak in loving terms of their efforts. But we cannot afford to recommend any literature as holy Christian Science which is not absolutely genuine. Beloved students, just now, let us adopt the classic saying, they also serve who only stand and wait. Our cause is growing apace under the present persecution thereof. This is a crucial hour in which the coward and the hypocrite come to the surface to pass off, while the loyal at heart and the worker in the spirit of truth are rising to the zenith of success. The well done, good and faithful, spoken by our master.
I thought that was wonderful, and that's a good rule to live by. here we could never tell anyone what to read, but our standard is very high, and to recommend some of these books, I will not do. The New Age. Well, thank you all for joining us today. I'm sure you have a much greater sense of your divine faculties. And we will now have a wonderful service. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.